Hey gang, it's Mark here. Before I get into today's episode, I wanted to share with you a very special announcement. Now, in case you missed this over on social media or on my email list, and if you're not on my email, how are you even getting through the week? Make sure to go and do that. You can go and check that out at theunconventionalist.com/newsletter. But back to the special announcement. The Unconventionalist podcast has won the Best Interview Podcast Award at the Podcasting for Business Awards 2021. I've recorded an entire behind the scenes video that I'm going to put in the show notes, but I want to let you know, go and check it out. It's on my YouTube channel, and people have been sending me dozens of messages to congratulate me and also said they really loved the video. So go and check that out. But from the bottom of my heart, thank you. Thank you for your support. Thank you for your love. Thank you for being behind this podcast, be it for the last 5 years or the last 5 days. Now let's get to your show. Hi, and welcome to the Unconventionalist podcast. I'm your host, Mark Roost, and this is the show about what it's really like to turn your message into a movement. In each episode, I sit down with an inspiring guest to pick their brains and heart about what it's been like, the ups and the downs and the lessons from both to live a more meaningful and purposeful life. Now, this week's episode is a very important and special episode. I'm very honored and privileged to share it with you. Before I get into today's juicy guests, I did want to take a moment to say a big, heartfelt thank you. Ever since I found out that the Unconventionalist podcast won Best Interview Podcast category at the Podcasting for Business Awards 2021, I've received so many messages, emails, DMs, tags on social media, message of support, which honestly means the world to me, because I first launched the Unconventionalist podcast in summer of 2015. This is going to be the sixth year that I'm running this. And hands up, honest truth, I haven't been as consistent as I wish I had or should have been, but I also did my best. And it's been the one thing that's been consistent in my life over the last 6 years, more than any relationship or careers or even houses I lived in. So it's a special recognition of the body of work that I've put out into the world. So I just want to say thank you. If you appreciate this podcast, if you enjoy these conversations, if they inspire and move you in some way, there's two things that you can do right now. One of them is to share it with a friend who needs to hear what you have to say, because I truly believe that this podcast is a life-changing podcast. And this will only have the ripple effect that I intend to have in the world if you help and come on board and share it. Number two, and this is something that I'm often reminded of, is so many people reach out to me and say that they love the show, really appreciate it, and ask, like, have you gone and left a rating on Apple Podcasts? Have you subscribed? Like, oh no, I didn't know I could, or I forgot. And so that does a huge difference. I'll tell you why. When you subscribe and when you leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, what it tells the algorithm of Apple Podcasts is that, hey, this is a show that matters and maybe we should push it to more people. And so the more people listen to these conversations, the more we're going to help change the world. I truly believe that. And so that's why I'm asking you to take a moment. It takes a minute to go over an Apple Podcast, to leave a rating and review, and to subscribe to the show wherever you are in the world. And then tag me if you want to share so I can celebrate with you and give you a virtual high five. Today's conversation matters. And every conversation matters that we have on the show, but this conversation particularly matters. And the reason being is that there's a lot of work we need to do when it comes down to talk about race, when we talk about blacks and ethnic minorities and how the world would look like to have an equal table for all. On the 25th of May, 2020, George Floyd was murdered in plain daylight by officers of the law. And subsequently, a wave of emotions hit the world where systematic racism had been called out yet again, and people put up on their social media feeds black squares. And as you'll hear from today's conversation, there was a noise for a few weeks and then it quieted down. And I remember when that happened, to not only feeling awful and heartbroken and outraged, but the truth is I also felt confused as to what was the appropriate response. What should I say? How should I say it? And that analysis paralysis got in the way of me truly showing up as a vulnerable human to say, I don't know what I can do, but what is something I can do to help, right? And reach out to friends and do something, but I didn't. And I regret that. Hand to heart, I do. And so when I interviewed Lucy Werner on the podcast and we had a conversation about her amazing book, Hype Yourself, she was honest and real to say that she realized that she needed to do better and be better when it came down to be a voice and an ally for those who needed it, and hired the work and a consultant and worked with Vanessa Bello. So when I heard about that, I thought, okay, this is something that I need to look into. And so Vanessa is the founder of High 15. There's a great story behind why it's called High 15. She has an incredible background as a consultant and a futurologist to try and understand future trends, especially in fashion. But in her own words, she left her native France because France wasn't, and I would argue still isn't, ready for black greatness. And so she wanted to go and explore a world who would accept her more for who she is and what she has to offer. And through those conversations, she was led to an incredible opportunity to go and speak about her story, despite her not feeling or knowing that her story mattered. And that sparked a trickle effect of becoming an expert in diversity and inclusion and belonging in the workplace. She's got an incredible roster of clients behind her, from Disney to LVMH to Gymshark, Levi's, and worked with some incredible brands to try and help them better understand conversations around race, inclusion, and diversity. It's an amazing podcast. It got emotional, it got real. And if we're not willing to have uncomfortable conversations with each other and acknowledge and address our shortcomings and be open and curious enough to say that I don't know and I want to know and I want to do something about this and what can we do, then I do believe the world would be a better place. And yeah, really, really excited and honored to share this conversation with you. If you find it powerful any kind of way, please let me know. Leave a rating or a comment over on Apple Podcasts, but also underneath this video on YouTube if you're watching on YouTube. And all the show notes, as always, will be in the link below, so you can go and check out the resources on how to get in touch with Vanessa and find out more. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, I give you the one and only Vanessa Bello. Vanessa, welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you so much.
Yeah, really, really great to connect. And look, you know, one of the things I loved about you was you reached out and said, hey, let's make sure we connect. And I was like, at first I was like, man, I don't normally connect with guests before because I'm always scared of the juicy bits being told during that connection. You're like, no, I want to connect. And we connected. And then I was like, you better make sure you bring that back in the actual interview conversation. So I'm counting on you, like some of those juicy stories.
Yeah, don't worry.
Right? But for transparency, like share, like, why did you want to connect? Why did you were like, okay, let's make sure we have a conversation before?
Because I get invited, you know, like luckily, I think it's quite a blessing. I do get invited onto podcasts and things. And for me, I always like to, when I don't know the person, even though we are connected via, you know, like the network, I like to make sure that I get interviewed for the right reason by people who actually care about what it is that we're trying to do or that I'm trying to achieve in this conversation around diversity and inclusion and just my purpose overall. And because I think that there's been too much performative everything that I'm just like, I don't have the energy. I'm just going to feel I don't have the energy. So I just wanted to, you know, when I've never spoken to somebody, even though I listen to the podcast of that, then I like to actually be like, let's get a rapport here. Yes. You know, like, will we gel? What type of vibe will that be? Do I have to come up? And also I am a bit part of team too much, as I always say.
Did you say team too much?
Say again.
Did you just say team too much?
Team too much, hashtag team too much, yes. You know, so I like to actually pre-warn almost the host that, hey, if you are interviewing me, I'm going to be 100. Are you ready for this? Is this type of show? If it's not, I'm not for you, you know?
Yeah, I get that. Love it. Well, thank you for that. And look, I'm going to go straight into it, right? Like one of the things that I told you when we were talking about, I said, when the whole Me Too movement was getting like out on social media and everybody was talking about it and, you know, following the murder of George Floyd and everything was blowing up, I started being conscious and aware that I was not playing my part in making sure I gave a voice and airtime and space time equally. And I said to you, and I'm putting myself on the spot, but I said to you, I realized, I said something like, I find it really difficult to find or know where to find, you know, guests that can bring diversity to the portfolio of people I interview. And you said something to me. Do you remember what you said?
I said, I'm here. We are here.
Yeah.
You know?
You said, it's not hard. You told me like, it's not hard.
Yeah, it's not that hard because it's true. Like, you know, for me, I'm going to be 38 soon, right? Yeah. So I've been, you know, a Black woman doing what I do and being who I am for all, like, you know, thousands of days. You know what I mean? And the same way that you've been, you know, Marc, you know, Le Russe, you know, and you for thousands of days.
You are officially the only guest who has ever pronounced my name like the correct way in French. I'm just straight up. Like, I don't think everyone's ever pronounced my name Le Russe, right? Like, it's always been like, Le Russe, Le Russe, is it? Le Russe, what is it?
And, you know, being French helps, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But I think it's the idea that for me, I'm like, we, you know, Black people or people from ethnic minorities are here, especially in London. I think it's a bit of a cop-out to be like, hey, I don't really know. For me, then I'm like, okay. So if you don't know, what does it say about you? Much more than actually the overall, you know, of our society, because we're here. Yes, it's only 14% of the population, but it's 45% in London. And I'm thinking, come on now, let's just not, you know, pretend that we don't know anyone, because we know, you know people. And again, it's about being brave enough to be like, okay, being honest and be like, I don't have many, but I have some. Yeah. So how can I actually reach out to these people to,
One of the things I'm really keen to discuss and talk about and dive into, and just straight up, like, one of the reasons why I said, oh, it's kind of hard, like that kind of excuse and that cop out, was when it comes down to talk about race, when it comes down to talk about diversity, I can only speak from my own experience, right? Like, from how I feel around it. And I feel like I've fallen into the trap and the danger of wanting to make sure I don't offend and that I don't say the wrong thing. And so as a result, I'm like paralyzed and like a deer in headlight. Instead of saying, because for me, it's like the idea that I would go and see my Black friends and say, hey, so I'm looking for more Black guests. Do you have any, you know, one that you'd like to recommend? You, and I'd love to hear what you think about this, but for me, that felt like inappropriate, or it felt insensitive, or it felt, and so as a result, I felt shame. I felt guilt, right? Like what we talked about a bit offline. And so I didn't do anything. And so now I'm kind of like, now we're connecting. And this is one of the things I want to talk about, because I know other people out there, like, right, like other white guys or white girls who've got podcasts who are like, oh, I want to do something, but how do I go about it in a way that is culturally sensitive, or whatever the term is. Like, it's even now I'm talking about this. I'm like, am I saying the right things? Am I messed up? Am I, like, you know, so, and I'm sure you must come across a lot of that.
All the time, the time, every single day, which I think as a D&I expert is quite, there is a cost, you know, there's an emotional cost that comes with that. But okay, I'll forget the emotional cost and I'll just focus on,
well, hold on. Why would you ignore the emotional cost? Because that's an important element of it.
It's
right?
Very important. I wanted to, I guess, connect first and answer first your navigation of the discomfort around having the conversation, and then talk about the emotional, cost. So it comes together, but in order. So when it comes to diversity, inclusion, and belonging, or just in general, talking about race, ethnicity, marginalized group in general, because, you know, you are, you know, a white man, which means that also you do have, maybe you've got this when it comes to women, I don't know. When we have principles, four principles to tackle, to help people tackle this conversation. First, self-awareness, understanding and knowing who you are. So whenever you feel, you know, that thing of, oh my God, can I do this? It's always a great idea to connect on, but what are my values? Why do I do what I do, right? What's my purpose? So and I know that it's quite bateau. It's actually quite buzzwordy. But the reality, though, is that it's very important, because self-awareness really matters. Also, it's about connection. It's about saying, okay, it's about vulnerability in the connection. So saying, I feel quite uncomfortable about it. I'm not going to lie, right? But I'm aware of it, and I'm going to be radically honest, which is another principle, and I'm going to share that and be like, you know what? You have people in your surrounding who you feel comfortable right? And who are from an ethnic minority background. And it's be like, can I just be 100% with you? The other person will be like, you aren't you always? That's a good place to start. Okay, fine. We've never really spoken about race because for me, I don't see you as a Black woman. I see you as Vanessa, whatever. And now with everything that's happening in the world, I'm actually really thinking, am I doing my bit as a white man, right? To support whatever that we're trying to do in the society. And I'm quite uncomfortable talking about this, but I think that one of the things that I could do is to represent, help actually Black women, Black men, ethnic minority people or POC in general to I could give them access and give them a voice. I am not saying that I'm the solution, but I could be part of that solution. So do you have anybody who you think, knowing me, who and what I do, think that could actually be I could have great conversation with, you know? And it doesn't have to be about race. Here we're talking about race because I'm a DNA expert, but actually. And that is the fourth principle, which is full collaboration. So you ask the person, you don't put it on them. You actually just, say, we actually need help here. Or actually, maybe we all need help and let's come together to focus on what it is that we're trying to do here. So the self-awareness, vulnerability, radical honesty, and full collaboration are those principles that I do think people are not connecting enough with, and that gets replaced by the paralysis, by the white shame, by the white guilt. And I'm thinking, again, we've been here. We are not brand new, you know what I mean, to this world. And once I understand the shame, the discomfort, what we need to really focus on is what is it that we're trying to achieve. And I think that this should be paramount to anything. And we navigate those emotions, you know, we're all humans at the end of the day.
So talk about the emotions, because you said, I want to part the emotions for a second, talk about and address what you just said. So what's the emotional part of it?
The emotional cost, I think, is that, you know, I'm a Black female diversity and inclusion consultant. And I think that it's having to, there's something my dad always told me, Vanessa, you are cursed with common sense, you know? And he said that to me from a young.
I love, by the way, I hope you're going to share at one point the story of you when you grew up and one of, you know, what is it? You need to keep your receipts. Was there something like that? There's a sentence that your parent, that we'll talk about that. Anyway, yeah. So you were cursed with common sense.
You know, like my dad is kind of he's not kind. He's my guru in my life, right? So a lot of my references actually come from him. And he's always he's always told me you are cursed with common sense. And I've never really understood what this meant until a few years back, but this year, 2020, 2021, as we are tackling this conversation much more in workplaces, I really understand that indeed for me, something that is quite simple, right? Human, emotional, real, honest, is something that so many people struggle with. And I think that
100%.
Having to repeat and repeat and repeat and repeat, that has an emotional cost on me because
true.
I'm maybe blessed in the sense that I try to explain things in a very simple manner. I pride myself in doing that. Not simplistic, but very simple because my English is not my mother tongue. But I do think that sometimes, you know, I get sometimes frustrated and that's not something that I factored into really actually doing this work. Because before I was doing this work.
What's the frustration? I'm just curious. What's the frustration bit?
I think the frustration is that sometimes people feel so comfortable, right, with me because, you know, my branding is around joy. It's you know, I'm a positive individual. I'm very driven, but very joyful, colorful. And I think people feel so comfortable with me sometimes that they forget themselves almost, you know what I mean? And they all come down with stuff and you're just like, wow, okay. You feel comfortable telling me something that's borderline racist here. Do you know what I mean? And I understand where people are coming from because, again, I try to look at it from two perspectives, right? First perspective is that they feel comfortable and I need to help them navigate this. But then the other perspective is that, you know, at the end of the day, when I take all of my, you know, phone away, I am this little Black girl, you know, 3 years old in this world who, you know, and I still see myself, so, you know, even though I'm almost 38, I still see myself as the 3-year-old Black girl who actually realized at that age that the society was not made for her, and that she would have to work very, very hard to actually exist, right?
What So this was in France, right? Like you're speaking to 8 years old when you realized, was it at school? Was it something like, what was it? Was there a conscious moment for you where you became conscious of this?
Yeah, for me, so I'm the middle child. So I'm 2 years younger than my older sister. And when you have, I believe when you have an older sibling, you develop quicker, you know, like the middle
Amen.
Child.
Amen. Says I'm second. So I keep on harassing my brother around this.
I think so. And I was very like, my mom always said like, oh my God, you know, as soon as you popped out, you were just already like, okay, what are we doing here? You know, like always curious and really looking around and trying to connect stuff. And at three, I think that I had an accident, so because I was whatever. So I was born with 12 fingers, first of all. And so my, I don't have them now, but my, yeah. So my mom took her time because my mom likes difference. And so, for example, so when the surgeon came, the doctor came to say, you've got a beautiful little girl. She's like, yeah, I really want you. And she's like, yes, she's got some additional things. And she's like, okay, what? And they're like, she's got two more fingers.
And was it on one hand? Was it one hand or did you have two?
So I had 12, so one and one.
One and one.
So one on each end at the end.
Yeah.
And then my mom was like, oh, better 12 than eight. You know, like this is the type of family, you know, that I was born in.
She's got a point though. She's got a point.
She's got a point. Yeah. She's like, we can always remove, but she took her time. So anyway, in the end, removed the fingers. But I then got still Sasha, I'll show you because this is I have an extra little piece of skin, right? That you can see. And so, and this when on an adult end, you can't really see it, but this is why I always have this ring. But then on a child, right, you can notice. So I felt I got rejected at school when I started to go to nursery. I got rejected because, you know, in French, you play la tomate, you know, the tomato in the round, you know, like la ronde.
I don't remember that.
And then you play, you know, you have to hold everybody's hands in a circle and then sing or whatever. People didn't want to hold my hand because I was different.
Did you make up in that moment it was because you had an extra piece of skin or because I'm black?
No, it was because I'm different.
Right.
Right. Okay. It was because I'm different. I was different.
Okay.
And then it started with I am different. Just, and then I looked at my older sister. She didn't have that, right? Mm. So I was looking, oh, wow. I looked at my parents. My dad actually was born with 12 fingers also. Never knew
no
that.
Way.
Yeah. It's something that is hereditary. And actually the Caribbean people said that it's a sign of luck. So you're just like, okay, let me, you know, it's okay. But when you're a child, you don't understand that.
Sorry, I didn't catch that. Who says it's a sign of luck?
In the Caribbean.
Caribbean, okay, cool.
In our culture, like I'm from Guadeloupe and Martinique originally.
Okay.
So this is kind of what we say. And so when I discovered I was different at the age of three, I think I started acting up at school, you know, a little bit. Mm-hmm. Not much, but just be like, oh, I need to be a bit, I don't know, tougher, you know, than other people. My experience won't be the same. And I had this realization then just because of the fingers. And then it started with you're different. And then as I had more experiences just in life, you know, six, seven, etc. Then I started to realize, oh, okay. So I don't, as a woman, as a girl first, I'm not the same as boys. And I'm not seen as the same as boys. And also my parents, they really put a lot of emphasis on school. We had to be top three, part of the top three. And so I was very conscious of I have to work really hard because on top it was always I have to showcase that I'm okay, you know, that I'm normal, even though I was not because I had an extra finger, whatever. And then as you grow up, then of course you get the idea of, hey, you're black. Mm. And my mom again, my parents very open, trying to actually give us things that they didn't have when they were younger. They sent us to summer camps very early on. Mm-hmm. They sent us to Germany, to Ireland, for us to, you know, work on the language and experience even more difference now because of my race, right? Mm. So that feeling of I am different because of my extra finger, then after this because, and then after that being rejected, it was a rejection piece that made me connect with the fact that, right, okay, so this is not this, you know, my
Do you have a memory? Like, do you have a memory of the first time you were aware of the fact that you might have been considered different because you're black, or was it during the summer camp?
Germany, Bavaria, I was 12.
Yeah.
And but that's the most blatant one. Mm. My dad used to be in the police force in France, and so sent me on this German thing for 3 weeks. The way that they did it was that children would be like in a line or whatever, and it would be like a celebratory kind of thing. They'll be like, "Hi, this is Mark. Mark is 12 years old. He comes from Paris. Da, da, da. So who would like to welcome Mark in their house?" You know? And the families would be like, "Oh, it's whatever." And then Vanessa comes, nobody says us. And I'm like, "Ah, okay. All right." Then thank God, you know, there's always, I don't believe in God, but thank the universe. There's always something that happens. And actually, so I was the last child. Not being, sorry, I'm getting emotional. I've not,
No, you.
all of those stories I've not spoken about in a long time.
Here's the thing I want to say, Vanessa, where there is stories, there is emotions. And
Yeah.
on this podcast, I tear up, guests tear up. It's like emotions are welcome.
I
And
love to cry also. So don't, you know, I always say that to people. I love to cry. I
I'm
will
a
cry
good
to meet
cry.
people
I
half
love a good
the
cry.
time. And you know, and I'm good with makeup, so my makeup doesn't budge, so it's all good. Important.
But that, you know, I
It's
just want, but that, I just want to like pause for a second. Acknowledge that as a 12-year-old,
Yeah.
the emotional impact that that would leave on you and the scars that you would carry that still to this day, no doubt, is
Nobody
super
said,
tough.
you know, nobody said, "I would like to." I was the only black child. And my dad always, again, my dad always had these things, right, to say. And, you know, preparing me and my sisters and be like, "Hey, you are going to be the grain of coffee in a bowl of milk. That's who's going to be you." But you know what? Had that flavor, right? That strength that, you know, and that was,
That
and
moves me.
I'm, you
That's
know, I'm
awesome.
blessed because that's the type of parents I had, right? I still have, thankfully. But you know, it's tough because the parents were not there. And I'm like, "Oh my God, so that means that nobody really wants me here. What am I doing? Am I going to live with the teachers? What am I going to do?" And again, but in those moments, you find solace, right? So I think there was a family, actually, the mom was French, lived in Germany, and came from Guadeloupe, where my mom is from. Same name as my mom. So when
Really?
she and I was so like, "Oh my God." And then they picked me in the end because actually they came a bit late. So actually I ended up with them. And then when they asked me a question about, "Oh, what's the weather like in Paris?" And I tried to explain. And then, but because I was so like, "Oh my God," then she said it in French. She said, "Hey, alors, il fait beau à Paris?" And I was like, "You speak French?" And she's like, "Yes." And I was like, "Oh my God." You know, in moments of disarray,
Despair.
I call it, you always find there is a light, right? So, and my life has been a lot about, you know, those little kind of stories. And yeah, so, and I had braids also. So my mom, we used to give up because we had natural hair. She gave us braids. And again, same trip, I go to, like, you know, swimming pools that are massive in Germany. And I remember me being in a swimming pool and people coming like I'm a monkey in a circus, touching my hair. And actually taking my braids, and maybe I had maybe, I don't know, about seven or eight people around me just fascinated by my hair. And me in the middle, I'll be like, "What is this?" You know, like, seriously, can I get a break? So my parents had no idea, of course, that they were sending me to the most racist
Bavarian town.
but
But
you know.
and interesting, and how formative those events and moments must be for the work you do today.
Yeah,
Right?
100%.
Like if only you could have educated some of those kids and parents back then on actually diversity and the importance of others, that experience might have been different, right? And also one of the things that we talked offline is around that you, because we talked about the stories and how I was held back a year and eventually kicked out, but you actually jumped a year,
Yeah.
right? Because that was it. You were drilled in, you need to work hard and pay your dues. You're going to have to work harder.
Yeah, and harder to get to somewhat the same space, but knowing that actually you may not be able to even reach what other what people would have in our society, but you would at least be somewhere, you know. And for this to happen, top three. And actually, with they said top three, it was top one. So this is what I thought, you know what, I'm going. And I, you know, I was that type of child where I'd be like, I really wanted to make my parents happy and proud of me. So I was always the first one. I said, you know what, I'm not even going to jump a class. Why not? And did it. And even I was first when in that first, you know, that new class.
Yeah.
And this is the thing, like I've got two master's degrees, you know, like France is very elitist anyway. But as a Black woman, I felt that I didn't have a choice but to push and push and push, you know. I could have been a fantastic hip-hop dancer, because I was a fantastic hip-hop dancer, but my dad was like, this is a passion.
Yeah.
You're going to actually go to a business school, you're going to, you know.
Yeah.
I had to choose.
That's amazing. So wait a second. So here's a question for you. Even with the two master's degree and the overachieving A-type kind of personality, did you feel that made a difference, or did you still feel like you didn't feel like you would belong, or that you were made to look or feel different?
Why do I live in London? Of course, and I think people ask me that question. So I've been in London for 16 years. And before 2020, with this global outcry about ethnicity and race, people, I would actually ask, do you want the real story or do you want just the glamorized version? And they'll be like, is there two? I was like, yeah, the real story is the real reason, I guess, is France is not ready at the time, was not, and to a certain
it probably extent, isn't now, still, yeah.
I'd say. Yeah, is not ready for Black greatness, I call it, or Black excellence, you know, and especially coming from a Black girl, you know, curvy at that, right? Mm. So I left because I was really like, I can't, you know, I don't want to sleep with anybody if I don't want, you know, to advance in society, blah, blah, blah. And also, if you don't have the network, it's, you know, it's like everywhere, I guess. But I do think that in France, it's even more. So I was just like, this is going to be hard. And one of the key things also that I guess saved me from being a child, 3-year-old to now, is that I love myself. I'm in love. I adore myself so much that I was like, I can't do this to me. I can't do this. Me, myself, and I would always.
You've always had this self-love, this ability to really.
Always.
Wow.
Always. And my mom, and that comes from my parents, I think, because, you know, my mom always told me, she's like, you were exceptional, you know, in terms of self-love and self-knowing yourself or wanting to discover yourself. I spend a lot of time by myself, even though, and people, I think, don't really see that now because I'm a socialite. I mean, I talk a lot and da-da-da. But I'm actually very introverted. Like I can, me, myself, and I, we have a good time, you know? And it's true, we do. The thoughts that I have, the story that I tell myself is fantastic. And I used to spend, as a middle child, you do spend that time also. So I was really, always been like, well.
What's interesting because it doesn't often go necessarily together, the high achiever with self-love, because usually the I need to perform and do well is usually tied to there is something that is not lovable about me if I don't, right? Yeah. So you manage to both juggle the academic achievement with self-love, self-compassion.
Yeah.
Wow.
But I do think, you know why? I always say that is that I'm blessed in the when it comes to studying, you know, like for me, I never learned anything by heart. I would always really could. I was clever. Like I would really speak a lot to my teachers and understand things and really talk from the heart. And I think for me, it was really the idea that I needed to know me, but really know the truth. You know, like I was like, but why are we doing this? And if, for example, I would never scare to actually be like, hold on, I've got a question, you know, and people, sometimes I would even be put at the end of the class to be like, you talk too much, you know what I mean? But I would be, I don't know, like always really aware that there must be more to this story. Mm-hmm. And I guess my dad has always, my parents have not been to school, you know, like they don't have a degree and things like this. So they have an atypical kind of path. And my dad, but I saw my dad's, you know, reading and, you know, loving the news and actually connecting with many other things. So for me, I was very curious, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think that really helped me. And also, as I said, as a middle child, you either, you know, love yourself or you sink really, because it's hard.
That's so true, because you're not the eldest, you're not the baby.
And also because my older sister and my younger sister, they fell in love with each other. And me, I was on the side. Mm. So I had to be like, okay, you know what? Just follow,
amazing. Love yourself. Yeah, that's a gift. One of the stories I really want you to tell is your first time you came to London.
Oh my God.
One of the reasons why you fell in love with London, I think. I don't want to make an assumption, but.
So I was in a business school, right? So studying at the time in Berlin, and not really knowing, to be honest, okay, this is cute, I like this, but where am I going next? Am I going to work in France or that? And I knew.
And you're still dancing at this point. You're still.
Yes, so I was still dancing a bit, and I was still dancing. But you know, like my dad was like, at some point in my life, I used to like this was my main part of my week, and then my dad had to have a conversation actually with my business school to say, listen, you know, you need to focus. And I was like, okay, cool. So then went to Berlin for 6 months. And then once in Berlin, I come for somebody's birthday, I come to London. And I didn't come to London, so I am now 21. Didn't go to London or go to London since I was 12 with my mom. Okay. So I'm like, wow, this is completely different. I go to Waterloo Station and I'm there chilling and stuff. And then I see some black guys in suits with briefcases and dreadlocks. And at the time, my hair was relaxed. For those who don't know about, you know, black people, just Google relaxer versus natural hair, you will understand. And so they were like, and I was like, wow, they've got dreadlocks. I went, because again, me being curious and me being, you know, as I need to know. I went to them with my French accent at the time. I mean, I still have it now, but it was more pronounced then. And I was like, excuse me, hello, where are you going? And they were speaking to me, we're going to work. And I was like, where do you work? And they were like, in the city. In my head, I knew the city was La Défense, so the French. Yeah. Because I was like, you are going to work with your hair like this? This is not possible. In France, it's not possible. And they were just like, yeah, it's fine, you know? And they were just thinking, like, with this little thing. It was just like, wow. So for me, black people here, maybe it's not as rosy as I think it is, but they can be themselves at least. Yeah. They can connect with their true hair, right? Their real hair. And I was just like, this was like something like, oh my God. And then the universe again came through. I missed the plane. And here I am 16 years later.
Wow.
I've not come back. I've not gone back.
You've literally missed a plane? Or was that?
Yes, literally. So when I went back, so fast forward. So I left from that trip, went back to, and I came back actually for the carnival in August. And then I didn't know what to do.
It's not a real carnival for those outside of the UK. Exactly. Yeah.
But I didn't know what to do because I had to do a sandwich year as part of my business school.
Okay.
And I didn't find I didn't even look, to be honest. I'm looking, let me just be real, 60 years later. I didn't even look for an internship in France because I think I don't want to be here. And then because I still had this thing about London, I was like, oh, Berlin, because I did really love Berlin also. Yeah. And then I was just like, so I came for Nottingham Carnival and missed my plane. And I was just like, oh, wow. And it was not my fault. I was stuck on a coach, whatever. And so I called my dad. But again, I called my dad and I said, Dad, I need to find an internship for a year. My dad's like, do you have anything in Paris? I was like, no, I didn't know. I don't. But, you know, maybe people are coming back to me. Never applied. But people are going to come back to me. He's like, listen, I give you 2 weeks. If you find something in London, you stay. If you don't, you come back. I'll give you the money. You're good. And I said, okay, fine. I had a friend in London. And she said, yeah, stay with, because she was living by herself. She had 2 rooms, 2 bedrooms. She's like, just come with me. Oh my God. She was like, it was like girly. Da, da. And then within the 2 weeks, I remember I had my, you know, colorful kind of Nottingham Carnival clothes. So I had to go to find like a suit and da, 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 to interview. And then I found an internship. And then my dad was like, well, that was the deal. You stay. And I stayed for a year. And then I went back to Paris only to finish my second master's degree. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, I belong in London. And then I told my parents, peace. And my parents,
I'm out.
Anyway. So
how did you end up in diversity work? Right? Like was that something that you thought at some point you were going to end up back, or was it you accidentally fell into it? Or is it just you were tired of people asking you questions? Like, I'm, you know, I might as well charge you for this because you should be paying. What was it?
No, not at all. People have to convince me to do this. So which is actually quite interesting. So I'm actually a business strategist, right? So I've worked in market research. I've been a consultant all my career, but in different things. So market research, brand perception, brand competition, brand competitivity, et cetera, et cetera. And innovation, et cetera. And so at the time, I used to be a futurist, meaning that I used to work for an agency looking at what would happen in the world and impact the design industry in the next 2 to 5 years. So this is what I used to do for 4 years. So for 4 years, I used to travel the world, do a lot of webinars or seminars and keynote speaking and working with a lot of clients actually to get them to widen their perspective and things like that. And then I remember I was invited to talk about the future of sustainability in a panel. And in terms of diversity, like when I say ethnicity and also body, I was one of the only ones, you know, Black women curvy. And so I started to talk about diversity and sustainability in a panel. And Levi's, so somebody at Levi's, a very senior person at Levi's saw me she was in the audience. And then they were organizing maybe 2 months later or something, a summit for women, women leadership, women development. And they wanted a keynote speaker to come in and just basically inspire people. And I was just like, I don't do that. If you want me to talk about future of something, I can't talk about my future, you know? So what do you want, you know, sustainability, denim industry? She said, no, we would like you just to come and talk about yourself and your achievements as well as your barriers and stuff. I said, listen, my life is my life. I'm not, no. Personal branding and stuff, I had no idea about all this. And so anyway, she convinced me to actually come and be part of this women initiative. I did it. My dad again was like, listen, what do you have to lose? Why are you afraid? What are you afraid of? Da da da. So then I was like, I'm not afraid of anything, you know, like you was that so go.
Reverse psychology. 101.
So then I went and then I had and this was a blast, 120 women in front of me. And I had this thing of what can I tell them to actually make them care about what I'm going to say and stuff. And I had no press training, nothing. And anyway, this worked out. And actually they told me,
was this a paid gig or was this just like a come and take?
It's supposed to be a paid gig, but at the time I was employed by another brand and they were just like, you can't, you know, no, you're not going to be paid by somebody. It was not a competition, but they were like, you don't do that. But if you want to go, because it was a closed event, if you want to go take holidays, go. So, but you had to be signed up by the legal team, blah, blah. But anyway, there and I didn't accept money because I did it for myself. At the time I was contracting somewhere but full time, and so I didn't have my business at the time, so there was just like, if it's closed behind the door you can go. And I was like, it's a personal challenge because I was thinking about maybe being a freelancer and things like this, and I was like, you know, this would be a great opportunity, let's see what happens.
Sure. And see the impact, like see if there's the test of water, see if anybody's interested in what I have to say, if this resonates or lands. Love it.
Great. And again, the universe, you know, the universe got me before. So maybe, you know, that's another thing. So then went there and then I had a line of people saying, do you want to, can you coach? Are you a coach? Do you coach? Do you mentor people, you know, in terms of growth mindset, resilience, blah, blah. I'm not at all. What are you talking about? I'm a business strategist. I just came to tell my story because
I'm going to tell you about the future in 2 to 3 years, like plastics are going to become the new material for swimsuits.
And then in the end, I was like, wow, the human connection there, my realness, my self-love, my everything to my life was very mattered to people, you know? And
well, it's compelling. It's compelling. It's compelling. It's like when you come across people who are bien dans sa peau, we say in French, which is like well in their skin.
In tune with themselves.
Right. True. Right. In tune with who they are, who show up as themselves and unapologetic about who they are. There's a part of all of us that resonates with that and is attracted to that, because I think so many people walk around with a massive fear of being seen for who they really are and put up masks, pretend to be someone they're not. And so when we come across someone who has, you know, I put air quotes here, the courage, really, it should be the norm. It shouldn't be the rarity, right? But like the courage to kind of show up and say, this is who I am, take me as I am. Yeah. Right. And I'm not going to play small to make you feel better. Right? I'm going to play big so that you want to play bigger.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
And I was nervous. I remember I told them as well. But in the end, so that was really eye opening. And then actually they said, you know, the team were like, you know, Vanessa, you over the 2 days, your speech really was something that people connected with, that women connected with. Would you want to come and do workshops, you know, on, you know, project yourself and growth mindset and stuff like this. And I was like, I've never done this before. But then I realized that as a consultant anyway, the way that I was always delivering my work was through really investing in the human journey and the mindset and stuff like this. So then I was just like, okay, fine, again, let's try. This time paid. And also when I discovered the numbers, was like, "Oh, that's sweet," you know. And I
say,
like,
"What?" Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, "What's my doing with my life? Okay, if this could be the thing, okay, I'm coming." So
I just want to speak to that for a second, because that what you just say there, I think when people realize when kind of your path crossed, right? Like you get to be yourself, you get to show up, you get to talk about something that might be for you that I didn't realize people were interested in this, but clearly they are. And, you know, I'm good at this. And when that kind of journey matches with an organizational budget, it is, I think, but now I'm less shocked, but I remember the very first talk I ever gave was at L'Oreal. And I remember when they gave me the budget, because they said, "Oh, we haven't talked about budget." I was like, "Oh, you know, buy me a sandwich. I'll be happy. You know, give me some shampoo and a bit of beard oil. I'll be good." And they're like, "No, here's like, you know, a hefty 5-figure fee." And I was just going, "Okay.
Are you serious? You're like, are you okay? You know, like you don't realize it." And so, and that was actually how I then started to really believe, okay, so first of all, there is another career for me here.
Yeah.
Second of all, but of course I'm French, so I had to have my receipts, right? So I then became an accredited coach, executive coach, and you know,
speak to that, because we didn't talk about that, because you told me this offline, the concept of you need receipts.
But I mean, you need your receipts. This is something that is very prominent in our in the culture, is the idea of, you know, I think that some people, my perception is a lot of people, and white especially, can just invent themselves and be like, "Oh, I am, you know, like, oh, I'm an entrepreneur," and blah, blah. Most of them are entrepreneurs, but anyway, "I'm an entrepreneur and I do this and I do that." Do you know what I mean? But actually, again, the idea of, but who do you think you are? You know, because I always think about my parents, they're like, "But what do you mean? You are what? You didn't study for that. Go and study and then you'll be." And also there is the French mentality of, yes, you've got to have, you know, like the
what do you mean you're an ex? You haven't got a certificate. You haven't got a diploma, right? So you're not legitimate. So yeah.
I went back, I was like, okay, fine, let me just study and stuff, which I did. And then I got my accreditations. And then I continued. So I got invited and invited again with by Levi's, which was amazing because I learned a lot about myself, to be honest, but also about just the idea of working in empowering others and especially marginalized groups. That was only women at the time. But with me, Kate was very clever in that sense, is that she was like, "You are a woman, yes. You are 30 something, so you appeal to both, you know, like younger people and more mature people. You are, you're an ethnic minority, you're Black, and you're curvy, and you are actually really comfortable within yourself." So, because at the time they didn't do plus, that's another thing. So I would come in jeans from other brands and be like, "Look, this is what we're doing. I have to come and spend 2 days with you and I'm wearing this other brand. How dare you?" You know, like things like that. So, and now they do plus and stuff like this. So very interesting, but, and this is basically how that I did it. And then I started to work with LVMH, also in women and supporting on women leadership. And then slightly it started to grow in, and then I started to really think, but hold on, there is this piece, which is this concept of intersectionality, which again, I'm an intersection of different marginalized characteristics. So I was like, I really need to, it's my responsibility now, if I've got that forum, to be able to talk more to it and educate others. And so that's how I again, in the women gig, I started to introduce actually other characteristic. And then I then also was I co-founded an ERG when I was employed on BAME, so ethnic diversity, and all of these experiences have led to where I am today, in the sense that I work on my craft every single day because there is so much in diversity and inclusion. And but what is great is that I think my three experiences of being a business strategist, executive coach, and D&I really helps actually the overall, because D&I, there's so much to do that you can't do it without having a strategic mindset. And
it kind of all it gels together. And
And trying to get people to ask themselves the right questions, blah, blah. That's through coaching. It's not easy every day. As I said, the emotional cost is quite hefty, it matters, you know?
Yeah. What's the transformation that you've seen or an impact that you've seen from your work that, because one of the, let me caveat that with one of the challenges I found that, but I personally, if I were going into companies, organizations that book me for speaks or talk, is that, yeah, it's great. Like in that moment, there may be a nugget or something that lands, but 6 months down the line, if I call them up and say, hey, how are you doing? And I don't know how much transformation has really happened. You know what I mean? Like, you know, how have you come? Have you come across a similar challenge? Number one. And number two, what are some of the things that you have seen that have long lasting change as a result of the work you do?
Yeah. Of course, like I've seen businesses, you know, again, the performance, right? The performative allyship, the performative care.
Ticking the box.
Performative focus. Mm-hmm. And that is something. So this is why now when I work with people, I always ask them questions. Okay, let's meet up. You know, I'm not going, you know, Vanessa, we saw you this, there, da, da, da. We would like you to, I'm like, listen, I'm going to ask you some questions. Let's get to know each other. And then based on stuff that they say, how they show up and stuff, then I'm like, okay, yeah, maybe. But the and this happens all the time, unfortunately. You do have a lot of businesses who actually see RDNI as a business opportunity, right? Okay. A commercial. They do it only for commerciality.
There was like a massive backlash. Was it? There was an English retailer who did like this whole ad campaign, like a black family, I think it was. And then they got a massive lash out of it. Because like, look at your suppliers, look at your internal HR. How many people have you got in the executive?
Yeah, like, thanks, Bruce.
Yeah, Dave McQueen did a brilliant piece on LinkedIn around this, Dave McQueen.
And that was like, I mean, crazy. But indeed, so this is why for me now, what I'm really focusing on, and I started last year really, is before I used just to come in, do something, you know, like a webinar or a workshop, etc., and go away.
Yeah.
Now, with some of my clients, what I want to do and what I like to do is to work with them actually on the
implementation.
Yes, on the implementation. Yes. So the strategy, but also the implementation.
Yes.
And so I try to work with clients, you know, from a 4 to 6 month plus kind of actually retainer. So then at least we focus, we say, for one of my clients, I work across all of their departments, which is quite a lot. But, you know, I'm the global D&I consultant and it works. It's a lot. But for me, what I see there is that from an awareness perspective, we have conversations, first of all, that actually people didn't even feel comfortable having before. Mm-hmm. You have people asking questions that, again, before that was not even part of their considerations. Sure. And I think this is the piece that I see. It's going to be very long, you know, and in terms of managing people's expectations, it's, I would say, the goal of everything that we do in diversity and inclusion is equality, right? Mm. For everybody to actually have the same opportunities. But the focus currently needs to be around equity, because we have to focus on giving the support to the tailored bespoke support to who needs it in order to at least even be part of that race. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
To get wherever we want to be. And that will take a long time. Equality is not going to, I'm not going to live through equality for sure. But I can do a lot when it comes to equity. And this is what I'm focusing on.
Why do you say that? Why do you think that you won't see the day? I'm just curious. Why do you think you won't see the day of equality or that equity because, kind of bridge the gap?
Because there is so much to actually correct or rewire structurally. And also emotionally, right? Mm-hmm. When we talk about the emotional baggage, the internalized oppression, when we talk about the cultural construct, the societal construct that we have to really, if we want this, if I wanted this to happen in the next 10 years, for example, I would have to really figuratively, actually not even figuratively, come with like a massive hammer, the biggest you imagine in the world, and go and really shake, you know, this world. Mm. And that's not possible, let's be real. Mm. You know, death doesn't do it, right? So death, like now what we saw, May 31st of May, George Floyd murder, global outcry. 2 weeks later, still talking about it. 4 weeks later, okay. A month, you know, 3 months later, then what? Mm. Right? Mm. And I think this is the piece, is that we also live in a society that is so about the next, you know, what's next, right? That actually we, and you know, again, that's maybe the digitalization of our lives, I'm not sure, but it's we often forget what's important, and we are very impatient as a society, so we don't, you know, we don't just try to actually give a lot of focus to things, because there's always something else that will distract us, You know, it's like we are puppies. I just got a new puppy, right? It's like we've got puppies, you know, and you have the squeaky, there's like squeaky toys everywhere. And we're like, oh, this is interesting. Oh, that's interesting. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So,
but you know, it reminds me, there's a quote, I forgot who said it. It's like, do not be afraid of the work that has no end.
Mm.
Right. And it's like, I guess, so, you know, and I realize the time we're coming almost to the end of the interview, that went that way quick, but so many more things I'd like to talk about. One of the things is, whenever that day comes, and may it be in many, many, many moons from now, and that you are an ancient soul that has lived a long and fruitful life, and you look back on your time here, what are some of the things that you want to be able to say that you contributed to, or that you helped make a difference or impact? What would those things be?
For me, if I look at the different type of populations or cohorts that I serve, mm-hmm. Is one, for people to truly understand the overall goal in our society when it comes to just being human. And and that again is equality and the necessity or the necessary measures in order to get there. So that is something that I anybody who talks to me and stuff on this topic, this is something that definitely I look at. I would like to think and hope that people, by being exposed to me, would have I would have encouraged them to be courageous.
Mm.
And I would love for them to feel that you can just be you. Because actually, what is it that I'm trying to achieve with D&I is the idea of belonging, which is, how can you be authentically yourself? Mm. Whether you've got the 12 fingers, whether you're Black, whether you've got blah, 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 do you know what I mean? And how you can be received or welcomed and valued, and actually just seen, you know, but not via a stereotype, but just through somebody's eyes seeing just you, you know, and also the idea that you don't have to carry, you know, everybody else's who looks like you, presumably, experiences and, you know, on your shoulders, you know, you can just be free, you know. So that's basically what I would love whenever I'm 7. And by the way, can we just say this? My nan is 90. I am going to be a fabulous looking 90-year-old.
That's the spirit. That's the spirit. Look, I've really enjoyed this conversation. We're going to come to the final questions. And before I do that, I genuinely want to say thank you for showing up and for doing the work you do. Because, you know, what struck me as soon as we started the conversation is when you talked about the emotional, you know, the emotional impact and then the kind of the logical structure of solving problem piece. And it must be at times, exactly as you said, the three-year-old girl who goes home and goes, oh my God, there's so much to process. And it's like a sponge and like, there's so much to do. And right now, because of who I am, because of my personality, because of how I show up in the world, people start suddenly almost racial dumping on me.
Yeah.
Right. It's kind of like, and so, wow, like you go back home and you got to take that on. So just for that alone, thank you, because I know it can't be easy. I'm also, what I'm taking away from this is radical transparency, honesty, and courage by reaching out to my friends of ethnic minorities and asking, look, I feel, you know, saying what I'm feeling, but I want to help in some way. And do you know anybody? You know me, you know the show. Is there anybody who I could give a platform for and a voice? So I'll reach out to you and ask you the exact same question. That's for sure. And lastly, like, what does being unconventional mean to you?
Ooh, that's I like this question. Unconventional means to be somewhat, if not all the time, fearless. And that comes with a lot, right? It's, you know, and I do think that, and it's interesting actually, because I am a very fearful, I'm a very anxious individual. I'm discovering this as I'm growing up, actually. Mm. I never thought I was, but it seems that I'm very anxious, but at the same time, I've got this, it's an anxious energy of me being really fearless, you know, and actually being like, I'm so focused on my purpose that I'm just like, yes, this is not going to be easy and it's not easy every day, but you know what? We move, you know? And I think this is the piece. So being unconventional is being focused on your purpose and fearless.
Mm, love that. And actually, I just thought of a final question. Imagine Piccadilly Circus. This was like either pre-COVID or post, like everyone's vaccinated or whatever, like everybody can walk around, right? Mm. And you know the digital screens on Piccadilly Circus that you get when you come out, you know, where the kind of fountain is?
Yeah.
And you could have a message displayed, right? Not like a huge amount of sentences, but just like a word or a few words or a sentence that you'd like to put there so that everybody walking will see it. What would you want that message to be?
Ooh. I would say joy. I will just give word, but I will be like, so a picture of me smiling with, or maybe not, I don't know. Maybe on my art, maybe more of my art, I think. And then so joy, light, and blessings. Just very simple, actually, because yeah. I think this is another thing that I connect with is just delivering with joy, you know, anything that I do with joy. Again, not easy all the time, but, you know, I'm trying. Light, because there is that light at the end of the tunnel. Whatever got you, whether that it's somebody, whether it's your universe, the God, whatever you believe in, or whoever sees you, mm-hmm. there'll be always somebody, hopefully, who will actually help you. So that there's always a light at the end of the tunnel. And counting your blessings, because the blessings part, you know, being grateful is something that I, you know, I try to practice. It's not easy when you find out, but at least I know that there are some, you know, and so yeah, joy, light, and blessings.
Love it. And where can people find out more about you if they want to know about your work, if they want to bring you into their organizations? Like, what's the best place for people to connect with you?
So the best place would be my website, Hi15, so H-I-G-H, and then 15 written, the number written out. Otherwise, I'm on Instagram.
.co.uk or .com?
Oh, sorry, .com.
Yeah. I'll put it. It'll appear somewhere like fancy on the video, and it'll be in the show notes anyway, but yeah.
And then Hi15 on Instagram. Otherwise, I've got another Instagram, which is Vanessa B Smiles. Mm-hmm. Again, the smile, right, the joy. Element. So that's basically me. I'm on social. I'm on LinkedIn also, Vanessa Bello.
Yeah. And love it. And for people who are listening to this and not watching this, I really recommend you go and check out the episode on YouTube, because you would be missing the fabulous and incredible art behind Vanessa, who you made and you painted this. And check this out, people. And this is true, because you're on record now, so you can't lie on the Unconventionalist podcast. Like, you weren't an artist. Like, it's not like if you grew up painting or drawing, you picked up a brush like a year and a half ago, did you say something?
Year and a half ago, that's when I started. That's with a why not attitude, you know? Always wanted to paint, never felt that I could get the French spirit, and then be like, the boyfriend's like, why not? Let's just do it. And I was like, actually, you know what? JFGI, just fucking do it, or something you say in English. And then that's it. This is now my studio.
Yeah, it's mental. Look, Vanessa, I appreciate you. Thank you so much for coming to the show. And I look forward to our paths crossing shortly.
Indeed. Thank you so much, Marc Le Ruste.
There you have it, folks. I hope you enjoyed today's conversation as much as I did. I wish I had way more time to speak with Vanessa, because I had so many more questions and so many thoughts. And again, what I really took away from this conversation, beyond the whole structure and the simplicity of what can be done in workplaces and conversations around race and diversity, inclusion, and belonging, is the emotional impact and burden that can carry when you do this kind of work. So Vanessa putting herself on the front line and almost being a sponge and absorbent of everybody else's stuff, trying to be processed, isn't easy. So I just want to acknowledge again Vanessa for that. And I know that this is going to spark some emotions, some questions, some thoughts for you. So please leave them in the comments below, share them with us, connect with me on social media. And if you'd like to find out more about Vanessa and incredible work, please, by all means, go and get in touch with her. We'll put all the show notes beneath this video or in the podcast notes, so you can connect with her. And we need to have these conversations. So let's continue. Let's be open. And what I'm taking away from this is, you know my podcast, you know the show. So get in touch with me. I'm looking to interview more Blacks and ethnic minorities to give a voice, give a platform, and also acknowledge that I have failed at making the effort to go out and search and ask because of how I felt, and because I felt it was awkward, as I mentioned in the interview, right? But that ends today. So reach out, let me know, and I'll keep on reaching out to friends and asking for help and support in this quest. And you know, as I said to Vanessa, let's not be afraid of the work that has no end. only when we come together as one human, you know, kind and connection, can we truly move forward. So hopefully this conversation inspired something inside of you, sparked something inside of you. And as always, remember, be true, be brave, be kind. And I'll add to this week, let it rip. I'll see you next time. Can't wait.